All right. Thank you so much for coming. This is CS50's orientation. If you're new to CS50, I'm David Malin, the course's instructor. And here we have Rob, Brian, Maria, and Doug, the course's heads. Indeed, anytime you email heads at cs50.harvard.edu, you will reach one of us. And we're also joined today by Dean of Undergraduate Education, Jay Harris, will speak in a bit as well. So thank you to Jay for joining us. So the goals today are not to focus on concepts, which are the domain of lectures, but really to help set you guys up for success. CS50 has a whole support structure behind it, but also high expectations of students, and so the goals is to help give you guys a roadmap for what the next several weeks are going to look like, what resources exist, and from experience, how to best take advantage of those resources, especially if you're a first year and new not only to CS50, but of course to Harvard and college itself. So without further ado, rest assured in this statistic, as I did mention in the very first lecture, that if you're sitting here or you were sitting there thinking that surely everyone to the left and right of you knows more, that's indeed not the case. As of last year, 68% of your predecessors had never taken a CS course before, and indeed one of the largest demographics of CS50 is exactly that group, students who describe themselves not only as having no experience, but also among those less comfortable. Indeed, as you've done on problem set zero most likely, or if you just joined, you will soon do, you'll be asked to pick your section for which we had different tracks. Sections for those less comfortable, those more comfortable, and somewhere in between. And odds are you're less comfortable if you're a little nervous about being in a CS course, you don't think of yourself as a computer person, and you're just kind of uneasy with the idea of even taking a class like this. If you've been programming in some form since you were 6 or 10 years old or whatnot, you're probably among those more comfortable, and that too is quite fine, because in addition to these different tracks of sections, you'll find that many of the problem sets have different problems, some problems for those less comfortable, some for more comfortable, and for those of you who aren't quite sure where you fit, you are by definition somewhere in between, and you'll have the option over the course of the semester to sort of pick and choose what kinds of problems and challenges you elect to do. So there's a little something for everyone in that sense to sort of reach up to his or her comfort level and threshold. So with that said, allow me to also take just a minute to show a short film that some of CS50's undergraduate team put together by visiting over the past summer alumni of the class, some past students, some past teachers, younger and older alike, to really paint a picture of the very diverse backgrounds from which CS50 and more generally CS students now come. It's indeed not the case that these are all folks who maybe back in high school sat with their heads down, focusing at a computer terminal completely antisocially, but rather come from all walks of life and go off beyond CS50, it's a very different domain. So we'll look here at some of your predecessors.
I realize that there was a real need to really just start having these tough conversations and start talking about the elephant in the room is what I called it.
People who already know CS, teacher kids CS, so then people who don't have that exposure can't bring it to the field.
When I had somebody that was like, I've been there, I can help you, that literally changed my life, right?
Hopefully we can all have a growth mindset, and the best that I can do is to have it myself.
What could I actually do in the world? How can I change the world? And so that naturally sort of leads to technology.
And it's just lifting this one tool, not the context, but the tool itself.
When it finally worked, it was probably the best feeling ever, because I worked so hard on it.
A year after, it was not a love, yet not no love.
Kind of a gray area.
It was a super gray area.
It could be really positive, or it could be, you know, hacking into something that you probably shouldn't be doing, but you learn a lot along the way.
I go back to something my colleague at the business school says often, which is, you know, do good, do well. And the message is, if you're doing something good out there that actually helps people, then you will do well. But if you go into it with, you know, I don't want to make money, it's not so clear that what you're doing will actually do good.
So if you'd like to dive in deeper to any of those stories, simply head to that URL there, which is also in the very first problem set. So if you're new to CS50 or even still considering whether or not to take this class, realize that getting started is incredibly straightforward. If you've not done these three things, these are quite simply the three things you should do: visiting the course's website, reviewing the syllabus, and diving into some very specific FAQs. But more generally, for the course of this whole semester, these are the course's expectations, is to either attend or watch all of the lectures. And indeed this year, almost all lectures lectures are on Friday, starting in fact tomorrow on out. You're very much encouraged to come to these. You are certainly welcome and allowed to engage with them online, especially if you're simultaneously enrolled in another class. And frankly, in terms of the course's digital support structure, I do think that we have reached the point where it can actually be a superior experience to engage in some of the course's materials purely online, asynchronously on demand. For instance, via the course's lectures on video, can you do even the simplest of things? Fast forwarding, rewinding, and so forth. But you can search full text transcripts of the most recent lecture so you can find some keyword about which you're interested. They have tables of contents. And then perhaps more popularly is the most frequently clicked button, which if I go to one of the lectures, say, from last year for which we have data, you'll find, for instance, that oh, so there's last year's statistic too. So this is 2x speed. It's perhaps a little incomprehensible when it happens to be me, but conversely, can you also slow things down as well? Can you browse at the right-hand side here, for better or for worse, everything that I happen to say in this year's or last year's lectures and so forth? So it really is a support resource so that even if you're using it not just as an alternative because of simultaneous enrollment, but as a supplement, tuning into a few minutes or the whole thing thereafter, or certainly prepping for a test or a quiz or a problem set, realize that those assets do in fact exist for you. Attending all sections up until the test, but it really is in the course's more intimate, small-scale TF-led sections that are once a week for 2 hours that you really dive in deeper to the course's material, explore more examples, get to ask questions in a more comfortable environment perhaps, and really start to master the material all the more. We set the expectation that you're expected to come for at least all of the sections up until the test, which is roughly at the midpoint of the semester, which is like 5 or 6 sections, the motivation there being to enable you to decide really after some experience and several informed opportunities to attend sections, whether or not this is an effective learning vehicle for you. And after the test, you can decide whether or not it's working or not working and decide how to spend that time thereafter. Submitting 9 problem sets or programming assignments, the first of which you've probably already seen, the second of which went out yesterday and for which you'll have the support structure moving forward in the form of sections and office hours and more. Take 1 test and 1 quiz. These are both open book and take home. The only thing you may not use is another human in any form for these things, but you'll have 72 hours for the first, 48 hours for the second. Neither will take that long, but the goal is to just give you a decent window of time after you've prepped for a few days prior and attended review sessions that we'll offer. You have a chance to dive into not problem set like programming challenges, but more conceptual problems, sort of short answer style questions where you reason through and apply knowledge to problems you've perhaps not yet thought about up until then. And then the culmination of the class really is its final project. We do not prescribe this. You instead prescribe it to us with some guidance and feedback from your TF. You'll decide how to take your newfound savvy of programming and computer science out for a spin and develop and design your very own piece of software, whether it's for the web, whether it's for your Android phone, your iPhone, or anything else. In fact, one of the most gratifying things to see at the end of CS50 every year is the so-called CS50 Fair, at which all of you, just like your predecessors, will exhibit your final projects. And it truly is remarkable, especially if you're among those less comfortable now and those 68% with no prior experience, just how much you can achieve over the course of just 3 months. And it's absolutely a lot of work, and expectations are absolutely high, but the goal of today, again, is to present you with utter clarity when it comes to what support resources exist to ensure that anyone can succeed, irrespective of his or her prior background or lack thereof. In terms of grading, FAQs tend to revolve around these. The course is by default, as you know, sat on sat, but some concentrations and certain gen ed requirements might require a letter grade. That's fine. Simply follow the FAQ on the website for switching from one to the other anytime before the 5th Monday. But then zooming in on what grades actually are composed of are these. Problem sets is where you'll spend most of your time in the course, and ultimately they'll be weighted most heavily toward the evaluation at the end of the semester to sort of acknowledge that time spent. The test at 25%, quiz at 15%, final project at 10%, and then engagement at 5%, which isn't participation per se. I've never been a fan of sort of coercing people socially to speak up when they really don't want to. But engagement can take any number of forms. Coming to sections, for instance, attending office hours as needed, participating digitally online with the course's discussion forum and so forth, asking or answering questions. This will be a measure that the staff and your teaching fellow in particular sort of decide based on to what extent are you actually engaging with the class, are you meeting us halfway as you avail yourself of these resources. In terms of problem sets, especially if you're new to programming, and you see many examples of these each week in the problem sets, we grade primarily along 3 axes and give you feedback along 3 axes. Correctness. This is your code correct? Does it do what it was supposed to do per the problem set specification, or does it have instead bugs in some form? You'll see in a little bit, thanks to Brian and the team, a tool called Check 50 that will tell you in advance, before you even submit, whether or not your code is correct. And if it's not correct, what tests or scenarios you're not yet meeting. So you have time to incorporate that into your work, and you're not just submitting blindly hoping that you did a great job. Design is more subjective. This will be qualitative feedback typed out by the teaching fellows on your actual code via GitHub, the platform to which you'll submit. And these are more like code reviews in industry, where you actually get a reasonable human's opinionated take on your code as to what you could do better, what's really good about your code, and so forth. And you can reply via email or via the web and actually engage in a conversation after your code is submitted. And then style, this is really more of an aesthetic. And it's actually the easiest thing to satisfy. It's how pretty is your code. Is everything nicely aligned with the space bar and other characters? Is your code well commented, as you might have seen yesterday if you were able to make yesterday's lecture, or soon will? How well do you explain it in English to humans that might be reading it? And for this, we have another tool called Style 50 that will also just tell you in what ways the style of your code can be improved. So realize those three axes are how we look at your code. And this course absolutely has a reputation of being difficult and or a lot of work. And I definitely think the latter is true. I do think the course is more work than it is difficult per se, but they certainly can go hand in hand to some extent. But no, especially if you're a first year this year, did we make a number of very specific changes to the course over the last year. Last year was my 10th year teaching the class, and frankly, and as we discussed in a blog post online about a year ago, it's sort of each year we sort of tried new ideas, we came up with new problems, new material, new videos, and we sort of kept adding and adding and adding to the course, and frankly, it never really occurred to me that it could be a good thing to remove things from the class, and so we had built up a lot of weight to the class. And so we made a very concerted effort not to lower expectations last year. Problem set still ask and hope as much of all students, but we removed a lot of the additional readings that might have accompanied that weren't necessarily core to the student's experience. We increased certain aspects of the support structure. So long story short, what you're looking at is Harvard's Q Guide evaluations, which you'll fill out at the end of the term if you've never been here before. Purple represents fives, which means students who said the course was very difficult, whereas one would be not very difficult. And the marked change we saw in 2016, last fall, vis-a-vis previous years, is that we rather restored ourselves to 2011's equilibrium level. So realize that the difficulty was rated more consistently with how we intended, because this increasing amount of purple over the past few years was not at all deliberate. And so we've recalibrated things. It's even more striking with workload. So similar question, but what was the course's workload last year in the fall? As a result of those interventions, did students' perception of the course's workload there in purple also decline and go back down to the levels we really intended in 2010? 2011 and so forth. And I mention this really because there's so many students every year that take CS50 and so many proctors and advisors who might have taken CS50 in years ago, or who have students who have taken it too. And so there tends to be a lot of information and advice that just lingers year after year, even as we make lots of changes. So this is the raw data that you can take for what it's worth yourself, and just realize that this is the very latest advice when it comes to considering taking a class like this. So what are the resources that exist, particularly the human resources, which are by far the most robust and important at the end of the day, even beyond the tools? There's lectures in which we introduce concepts each week. You're not going to learn how to program per se in lectures. It's really meant to introduce ideas, talk about topics, and give you a mental model for what you're actually going to do hands-on. In terms of the resources, every lecture will be accompanied by not just the slides and the video, but all of the source code we might use in class. You can download before or after or during lecture, make notes on it as you will, or play with it yourself in the IDE, the programming environment that you'll soon see if you haven't already. And then even things like notes. I was never a fan, for instance, in high school where my head would too often be down while the teacher spoke about some topic. And what you'll see is that thanks to one of the teaching fellows, Chang, do we have someone actually making notes for all of you so that your head can frankly be up and be more actively and audibly engaged in a class, whether you're watching online or in person. And so realize these are meant to be an authoritative or canonical set of notes, really to free you from what might otherwise be a not very compelling intellectual experience. Really helpful for diving into a problem set perhaps, reviewing for the test or the quiz, or just referencing things thereafter as well. Beyond lectures are sections, which are bucketized into these several different comfort levels, and they too will be accompanied by slides and source code. And then there's office hours, which is our phrase for one-on-one help, and they come in two forms, small scale and large scale. Large scale is where there can be as many as 50, 100 or more people in the room at once, but there's also 20 to 30 to 40 of the teaching staff there at the same time. And then there's more intimate office hours at Harvard student agencies, right in Harvard Square, the design of which is especially to be not like a destination where you go and curl up for a few hours to work on some piece set, but drop by for a few minutes, maybe an hour, but really to get unblocked. And literally they are in the middle of Harvard Square by design, so that if you've got an hour or so between class and you know you've got some bug you were bumping up against the night before, go in, chat with a TF or a CA, get unblocked, and then have a productive afternoon or evening thereafter. And then finally, tutoring. If even with these resources you're especially uncomfortable and find yourself struggling in any number of the weeks of the class, that too is totally fine. Reach out to any of us via email or in person, and we'll also arrange for more intimate, at no cost or anything like that, tutoring with just one or two or three maybe classmates with a member of the teaching staff. So there's this whole gauntlet of resources. All that we ask is that you meet us halfway and let us know if you're unable to avail yourself of absolutely everything and need an additional hand. And more concretely, CS50 does follow a rhythm each week. There's a structure to it, and everything is very similar week to week, and so it's certainly helpful to get into a good habit early on. On Fridays, for instance, attend or watch lecture. Life can, of course, get in the way sometimes because of academics or sports or social or whatnot, but don't let more than a day or two pass before you at least play catch up and watch the video online. Meanwhile, sections will be always on Mondays or Tuesdays or Wednesdays, depending on the one to which you are assigned. If you miss one of those, you can go to another, but do get into the habit and get to know that smaller community of your classmates as well. Office hours as needed are as as follows, and this is always on the course's website, and we'll post these slides also on the course's website, but it's fine if you want to take photos for now for reference. Large-scale office hours are in Widener Library in the beautiful reading room twice a week for a couple of hours, and then on Sundays it'll vary by location, but similarly another support resource for you. And I can't emphasize this enough, and if you've read my email to the whole class a little bit ago, realize that with starting problem sets, though they'll be due always hereafter on Mondays, please do not ever start on Sundays. It is no fun whatsoever to program under pressure. If you do hit a wall, which is very common, whether you're new or old to programming, you just don't have enough runway to avail yourself of any of these resources. And the best way to approach things is to figure out a schedule early on in the semester for how you can maybe read the homework the first night it goes out, even if you don't really have time to dive in. Maybe the next day bite off one of the problems, if it's broken down into several problems. Just give yourself that runway so that you can actually take a step back. You can go for a jog, you can go to sleep, and sort of come back to these problems, because even to this day, that's the way I am too. If I hit a wall writing some piece of software, it's just no fun to try to power through, and indeed, that just sometimes makes the problem and my own stress level worse. Much better to, again, take a step back, kind of think on things in your head, you don't need a keyboard even to do that, and then come back to it when you realize, aha, you've had that moment. In terms of academic honesty, you may know, especially if an upperclassman, the course certainly has a reputation around this, not because students in CS50 or computer science more generally are any less honest than students across the college, but frankly, we look for instances of academic dishonesty and fairness to those students in the class who are behaving reasonably throughout the entire semester. And frankly, as computer scientists, we just have the tools that facilitate looking for submissions that don't quite live up to the course's expectations. And in full disclosure, we wanted to just present you with really the high-level guidance and the lower-level details to make clear that there's no reason to get kind of caught up in any situation like this. It is absolutely easy and straightforward to avoid these situations, and even if you make some poor late-night decision, are there recourses available to you? So overly simplified is this guiding light that the course's policy is be reasonable, right? And at the end of the day, that's what we aspire to define in the course's syllabus. More concretely, and a better rule of thumb, is perhaps this. If you're struggling with some aspect of the class, like a homework assignment and a programming problem, when asking for help, you may show your code to others, but you may not view theirs. And the idea here is that if you are sitting here and you can't get your code to work, it's not compiling, it's not running, it's not passing check 50, whatever the scenario, it is totally reasonable and healthy and intellectually good to sort of turn to the person next to you or a friend online and say, hey, can you actually lend a hand with the bug I'm struggling with? And so long as he or she takes a look at your code and then says, oh, well, you're just missing a semicolon or something stupid like that that's not really all that interesting at all. Or if he or she sort of starts to ask you rhetorical questions like a teaching fellow might, well, have you thought about this or that? All of that is good interaction. Where the situation devolves is if your friend says, ah, here, just look at my solution. And like that is perhaps the best rule of thumb to keep in mind. And the line is also crossed, though, if when Googling for solutions to problems, it's totally fine to search for something like, how do I do a loop in C, the programming language we've just introduced? Like, that's a very generic question that might be a useful ingredient to solving a problem. But if you Google something like, how do I implement a pyramid for CS50, like, you will get Google search results, and that is where a line is very clearly crossed. And honestly, in almost all of the cases in years past where students have found themselves in trouble with the Honor Council, it's scenarios as well defined as that, where they made a very poor decision, often very late at night, 1, 2, 3 a.m., after very little sleep, after so many deadlines and so forth. And if that does happen, as will happen to some number of students surely, realize that the course also has language around this. If you do come forward within 72 hours of making that poor, perhaps late night decision, and sort of own up to the experience and reach out to me, for instance, privately, or the course's heads more generally, we'll then have a candid chat. And it might be a difficult chat for a few minutes, for half an hour or so. But at the end of these chats, the goal is to understand what happened, how to prevent it from happening again. We'll shake hands, consider the matter behind us. We might still zero the problem set in question if a line was indeed crossed, but it won't be escalated to the highest level, so to speak, such that you then put your college time at risk. So realize, too, even if you do find yourself in this situation, avail yourself of those resources. And before I turn things over for a bit to Dean Harris, allow me to just show you exactly what this process looks like for us. We have not only this year's submissions to be, we have the past 10 or so years of submissions as well, and we have software as computer scientists that literally, quite simply, cross-compares all submissions against all other submissions, looking for submissions that are either identical or almost identical, that it's just not likely that two people sitting in their own houses or dorms wrote those same solutions. And we get as many as 5 million such comparisons based on that process, that we then have a gauntlet of us humans who ultimately decide whether or not things get escalated. It's not software that's referring students to the Honor Council, it's at the end of the day, humans. I mean, it's several of us, such that we whittle the 5 million down to 200 worrisome scenarios, then this past year to 140, and then this most recent year down to the 40, which were the cases we ultimately referred. Allow me, before we dive into now some of the tools that are here to support you and help you solve problems, allow me to introduce Dean Harris.
Thank you. I always love going after Professor Malin because I think he's the only person I've ever met who speaks faster than I do. And I would recommend not listening to him at 2x because you're not going to be able to make sense of it. And just more generally, I will say, I know students listen at 2x and you're going to do what you're going to do. We actually have no research on whether this is a good thing to be doing or not. So if you just don't have a good feeling about it, don't do it. That's not an Honor Council thing. That's just a piece of learning advice. Now, the reason that I'm here is because, as Professor Malin pointed out and has been reported in various places, CS50 does indeed, and this, by the way, is true throughout the introductory computer science courses throughout the country, does indeed generate the most cases for the Honor Council. And before we had an Honor Council here, we had an ad board. And as someone who has served on the first ad board, now Honor Council, for many years, have many years of experience looking at the various cases that come before us. And thought it would be a good idea to share some of the impressions from someone who's not a computer scientist, doesn't really know, how you get from 5 million to 40 with any, couldn't describe any of that. But to try to give you an opportunity now, first of all, to ask some questions and understand that much of what happens when cases are referred to the Honor Council and students begin to explain themselves, it is often, number one, I started my problem set at 7 p.m. on Sunday or whatever the time and didn't have enough time. And that's always a bad thing to do in this course and in any other course, right? If you don't give yourself enough time to get the work done, then you begin to start thinking about cutting corners. And that's a very common thing throughout the college. And please, time management is not easy. You're young. You're on your own, some of you, for the first time. I understand that. We have resources to help you with that. But much of it is just, sometimes it's simple arithmetic. How many hours do I actually need to do a problem set? How many hours are I leaving myself? And if those two numbers aren't aligned in a way where you also can get some sleep and some food and some, relaxation, you've got a problem. So, think it through and think it through carefully. But one of the things that we often hear from students is, you know, oh, I didn't read the policy until after they've been referred to the Honor Council, and that's really not the best time to read the policy. And you know, what often happens, and this again is true of many courses, faculty work very hard on what I'm going to call the front matter before we get to, you know, September 5th, do this, and September 7th, do that. We describe the course, we describe the requirements of the course, the pedagogical goals of the course, the collaboration policy of the course, maybe other things that have to do with academic integrity in the course. And students, I know, often treat much of that as you treat your terms and conditions when you're downloading a new app, right? How many of you have ever read terms and conditions for some app or some, you know, something that you've downloaded from beginning to end? We got one. All right, I see about 7 or 8. Awesome. Right? I will confess I did it once. And I must have, you know, 100 plus out, whatever I have, not to mention all the updates and all the other things. So, right, we tend to ignore lots of things and, you know, say, oh, it's a lot of lines, it's too much to read, and so on. So we're going to take a couple of minutes right now. And we're going to read together. You're going to read, I won't read out loud, but you will read the policy that's before you on academic honesty in this course. It is longer than many. It is. Some students who have read it claim it's confusing. We've worked with Professor Malin, and he and his staff have worked very hard to make it as, you know, to not to get rid of the elements of confusion. But still, we thought it would be good to take a moment, have everybody in this room read it, and then open it up for questions. What is it, if anything, that you find confusing? What do you not fully understand? What is it that, as you read this, you're not certain, am I allowed to do X? Am I not allowed to do X? And you know, this is your opportunity, not the only one by any means. You've got all these people here to help you at any other time. But this is one opportunity early on in the course for you to really engage with this. And after that is done, you've asked your questions. I will not be answering them because I can't. They will. I will have a few other things I want to say about just more generally the pedagogical goals of the course and some of the ways in which students perhaps don't understand that. And that also can sometimes lead to students thinking it's okay to do something that in fact it is not. Before I stop talking, and I do want to note, Professor Malin mentioned obliquely it may have an impact on your time here at Harvard. I will be a little bit more direct and simply note that for egregious cases of plagiarism, which is to say copying and pasting, you know, significant, you know, patches of code or whatever else you're doing, significant cases of plagiarism, egregious cases of plagiarism are generally responded to with a requirement to withdraw from the college for a year. And there are students at this moment from this course last year and other courses, it's not the only one by any means, right, who are in fact in, you know, not here this term because they have been required to withdraw for violations of the honor code that have been judged egregious. So please, you know, think this through. How many problem sets are there in the course? Nine. And in the aggregate, they're worth how much of your final grade? 45%. So on average, each one is worth what? I'm a humanist, I can do this, so you can, right? 5% on average, is that fair, right? That's sort of how it works. So now think about it for a minute. A year off from the college, or for that matter, you know, spending a year on probation, which is reported out to medical schools and law schools and everybody else, we're obligated to do that, you know, versus 2 points off on a 5% problem set. Think about it. Think about the, you know, the cost-benefit analysis. I know it's hard to submit something that you know isn't perfect. We all want to submit something that's perfect. But again, think it through. Does this make sense? Is this a rational way to behave? Right? And you know, when you have hit that deadline and something's not working, submit it. Right? And note that once you submit, right, you can zero out. How do you phrase this? Well, you can just drop one of the problem sets. You not do that anymore? All right, they don't do that anymore. Ignore everything I just said for the last 5 seconds. Can't drop anything. Remember that. All right, sorry. Anyway, take a couple of minutes, have a read, and then we'll talk. All right. Is there anything here that you don't understand? Please.
So the third to the last line about submitting work to this course. So for example, if we create a final project, can we submit this, like put this in a resume, or we're not allowed to do so?
No, absolutely. You can do that. The guidance there is that if you have a part-time job somewhere else and they've asked you to implement X and you submit X for your final project without disclosing it, that would not be intellectually appropriate.
And let me just say one more thing about that, because it's a broader problem in the college. Many students, again, don't read the handbook, which is understandable. That's not a criticism, that's just reality. There is a section in the handbook about dual submission. You are not permitted in any class to submit work, your own work, that you wrote for another class without the permission of both instructors. And the reason for that, yes, it's not dishonesty. I mean, there's a whole discussion about self-plagiarism and how to think about it. But the point is that you represent the work you submit in a course, not only as your own, but as your own in that course and representing the learning that you engage with and accomplished in that course. And it is never appropriate to submit to two courses unless you've spoken to both faculty members and they agree that for the particular circumstances, it makes sense. So that's not a unique CS50 rule that submitting to this and others. I realize it's not exactly what's said there, but just more generally because it's something that students are often not aware of and it has created some problems over the years. So just please be aware of that. Others, yes, David, you. Sure.
So we haven't talked about this in class. There is technology whereby you can take zeros and ones and kind of, sort of, convert them back to English-like code. Right, so we talked about the other way, where you go from source code, English-like code that you guys will write, to zeros and ones. There exists technology that kind of sort of goes the other direction, so that if you have like Microsoft Word on your computer, you can kind of figure out how Microsoft wrote it. And so what students should not be doing is that. And if you're not sure how to do that, you're safe. Yeah.
Can we look up syntax online? Do we need to cite that?
When in doubt, always just cite, because it just avoids any issues whatsoever. It depends. Like you'll see later in the problem sets, we'll have certain problem sets where you're encouraged to go online to look for inspiration, and you'll be directed to cite sources in that case. When it comes to very mundane things, which is easier for me to see from my perspective, having done this for years, than yours. If you are searching for something like how to do a for loop in C, like it's fine to cite that, but none of us are going to be all that interested in knowing where you learned a for loop in C, because that's not really the intellectual core of some problem set. But anytime it starts to get a little more CS50 specific, a little more Harvard specific, absolutely cite or ask us in advance if that's okay. Yeah, in the back. Nope, same guidance. There's no restrictions per se on what resources you can use on the internet. The guidance there again would be it's totally fine to Google something or look on Stack Overflow for something like, you know, how do I do a for loop in C, or something that's very mechanical, very technical, very specific to the language but not to the class. But the line is crossed again if you were Googling, you know, how CS50 problem set one Harvard, and it leads you to something on Stack Overflow. And honestly, a really good visual cue too, because sometimes students might be Googling very reasonably and they find their way to Stack Overflow. And it's only after they realize, oh shoot, this was some other student or an online student's question about some CS50 problem set that just Google search results led you to. So just keep in mind that on those results, there's almost always some mention of the file name, mario.c or cache.c or something like that. So just be mindful of context. And if you do goof, I mean, honestly, just email us, say, hey, I accidentally made my way here. And you know, we're not going to be upset if you're owning up to that right away. Yeah, I'm back. Generally, no. I mean, when in doubt, cite it. But I would say in a typical homework submission for the class where you've written a program that's maybe a few dozen lines long, it would be typical to have zero or one or two citations, if that. So if it's every few lines, you're unnecessarily letting us know.
Can I ask a
question? Sure.
So generally, I would say that if you are referencing anything that is linked to on the course's website, we have a resources page. You probably don't need to cite anything that you get to directly from the course's website.
Yep, absolutely. What's the question here?
Yeah. So for reviewing past tests and also for helping someone out to debug their own code,
mm-hmm.
What if you are helping someone out to debug their own code and then you see something and maybe you don't like note that, oh, this is something that could help me, and then later on you go to code and then you like subconsciously use that, even though you didn't like.
Yeah, that's fair. Subconscious is hard to give you guidance on. But if you realize at that point, like, oh, wow, what we were talking about earlier really helps me, just drop us a note proactively, and then you're good, and we'll be pleased. Maybe we'll still have a chat, but that would be a proactive, healthy chat, not a punitive or sort of reactive chat. Yeah. Yeah.
How do you cite? Just through commenting? Or how?
Yes, and we only just introduced this yesterday in class, but in C, you'll literally type // and then some English words, and that will be a comment. A question yesterday came up too about Scratch, because a few folks had some sudden worry, oh my god, I was looking around for inspiration for Scratch. That's totally fine. Like, the Scratch community is by design very collaborative, very remix oriented. So if your takeaway today should not be, oh my god, what did I do with Scratch the other day? We're really focusing on problem set one and, you know, college more generally here on out. Yeah.
One of your be reasonable ones, maybe you can talk about incorporating a few lines of code that you find online.
Yeah. Well, so here it depends, and it's easier. It will be easier in the coming weeks in class and so forth to give examples of this. But, and I don't mean to harp on for loops in C. It's just the example I've latched onto today. But when you are just really not sure how to do something syntactically, right? And you know it's just an ingredient. Like, you know you're solving a problem for CS50 where you have to do something a bunch of times, and that's going to require, you know, a dozen or two lines of code. You just don't remember, like, does the word int go here? Is there a parenthesis here? Like, that kind of stuff is perfectly reasonable to look on Google, Stack Overflow, and so forth, and sort of realize, oh, this person did it this way. Now I'm going to kind of adapt to that building block. Yeah, and yeah, this is the kind of thing that once you know programming, which you will, of course, only weeks from now if you have no experience, this will become clear in retrospect too. And so one of the reasons we're here is to try to give you at least some rules of thumb in the meantime to kind of guide you there. And again, whenever in doubt, ask us, and that'll be part of the process.
I just want to add, first of all, the last few words, cite the line's origins. If you cite the line's origins, right, then it's no longer in interest of the on account. So the course may not be happy with what you did, you know, in terms of an intellectual performance, but then you're not misrepresenting it. It's not an honesty issue. It's not an integrity issue. And you're good as far as the on account is concerned. How it will be graded, I can't say. The other thing I just want to note, because it has happened, if the only way to justify what you've done is to argue that the word few means 50, you're in big trouble. So don't go there, right? Few, whatever it means, it does not mean 50. So, you know, be reasonable, think about what it means in your life, and, you know, stay within those guidelines. Do not get into double figures. How's that? Unless you want to say something more specific than
I don't
that.
Know if I want to get to mid to 10, though.
All right, so. Yeah. Halfway to double figures. How's that?
Okay. Any other questions? Yeah.
So there is a mention of submitting things for this course and not submitting them for other courses.
Mm-hmm.
What about, like, submitting things for an assignment that you did in a previous assignment in CS50? So, like, for example, for the final project, like, if you...
Oh, that's totally fine. Yeah, within the boundaries of the course, it's fine that you use examples that I give you in class that are from the problem set itself, from your own work. Absolutely. Whenever uncomfortable with that, just cite the origin yourself. But anything within the bounds of the course are, by definition, fine. Those are, for all intents and purposes, the same course. They're just different demographics of students. And this is increasingly the case when students from high school have taken a class like this, or they have taken this class, but by proxy from their own teacher, and we want to make sure that they know it's okay to reuse some of that work if they've done it before. All right. Yeah, one last question, then we'll context switch to the last of our tools. Are you allowed to use extra libraries? Absolutely. And we only started talking about this yesterday. There's the standard library, there's the CS50 library, and there's bunches of others. Absolutely, when it comes to that. Yeah.
So let me just say two things quickly so you can get back to the business at hand. Again, we on the Honor Council and the ideas of academic integrity, what we're concerned with are indeed those questions of honesty and integrity, misrepresenting things, submitting things as yours that are not yours. I always cite when in doubt. And you know, always be mindful that this is something, you know, that is critical to the whole academic enterprise. And be mindful of that. But I want to just end with something, because there are times over the years students have come in, basically acknowledge, yes, I copied it and whatever, or the three of us worked on this together and so on. And then frequently we'll say, and I don't see what's wrong with that, because I already coded for so-and-so, whatever it is, and we're always working collaboratively, and we're always working in teams, and we can't even separate what we did from the other person, and so on, right?
That's all true, I suppose. You know better than I. Certainly, if you continue in the world of computer science, work in the world of computer science, you will be working in teams, you will be collaborating. Here at Harvard, in your more advanced CS courses and many other courses, you will be collaborating. Collaboration at certain times and for certain purposes is a wonderful thing, and we're happy to have you do it. But right, to be a good collaborator, you have to bring skills to the collaboration. You have to know how to do certain things on your own. Right? Otherwise, you're not really a collaborator. You're just a free rider of some kind or some dead weight to whatever team. So the purpose of this course and many other introductory courses is precisely to get you those skills so that you can, as you move forward in computer science or wherever else where these skills will be useful, to be that collaborator who brings real skills. For this class, right, what you need, what we want you to get out of this class, right, is each one of you, the ability to do things so that, again, you can really be part of this larger world. And what we want for you at the Honor Council, very honestly, is to never see you, right, there. Right, we don't want to see you there. What we want for you is to learn in this environment, to thrive, to grow, to 6, 8, 10 weeks, 12 weeks from now, be able to do things you can't really even imagine being able to do right now. That's a success. That's what we're here for you to accomplish. Right? And that means you do your work honestly, you do it with integrity, right? You do it on your own within the rules of the course, that you be mindful. And one thing I just want to let you know, that you have a test and a quiz, and the way the Honor Council looks, and these are take-homes, the way the Honor Council looks at any dishonesty on a take-home exam is the same as an in-class exam. Right? And we tend to look at that with a some perhaps harsher eye than some other assignments. Happy to talk with any of you about why that is another time. But there are very specific rules surrounding the exam, when the test here and the quiz. Please make sure you read it. Right? We've had cases, people say, well, I didn't read that. Right? Not reading it is not an explanation for why you violated the rules of the course. So make sure as you get assignments, problem sets, especially the quiz, the test, read the instructions, follow the instructions. If you read the instructions and follow the instructions, we will achieve our goal, which is, again, to never see you at the Honor Council. Thank you.
So yesterday in lecture, we introduced the programming environment you'll be using this semester called CS50 IDE. And do know that linked on the top left, thank you, on the course's website are not only that, but something called CS50 Discourse, which is the discussion forums to which I alluded earlier. Take advantage of those. And CS50 Reference, which will help you with the various functions that exist in C. But most excitingly are some of the interactive tools that the course has, really any tool whose name ends in 50. And for that, allow me to turn things over to Brian for a teaser of these tools. And you will get better and hands-on experience with them by way of tomorrow's super sections, per my email earlier today, in office hours and in sections beyond. Brian.
All right, so just wanted to take a quick moment to introduce you to some of the software tools that will prove useful to you as you go about working through problem sets within the course. If you haven't watched lecture already, this is CS50 IDE, which is the online workspace where you'll be writing most of your code throughout the course. And there are a number of software tools that are built into CS50 IDE that can help you along the way as you're working through assignments and working through problems. So what you can see here up top, I've tried to reproduce the Hello World program that was demonstrated in lecture yesterday. And this program, I think, might work, but I'm not totally sure. And so if I try to compile this program, turn it from source code into machine code, by typing make hello, as you see from lecture, and I press return, what I get is a bunch of lines of error messages that are a little bit confusing. So I'm reading something about implicitly declaring library function printf with type, and then something complicated that I don't totally understand. These are all things that you will grow to learn over the course of CS50. You'll learn what these error messages mean and how to interpret them. But especially initially, these messages can be cryptic and difficult to understand. So when these situations do arise, we have a tool for you called Help50, whose purpose is to take these error messages, try and understand them, and try and present you with a more understandable version of those messages. So I compiled this program initially using make hello. If I instead type help50, make hello, just whatever command I was originally typing and prepending help50 to the beginning of it, and then press return, What I get back is it'll highlight the error message, but then underneath it try and provide some additional useful advice. In this case, it's asking me, well, trying to understand that error message, did I forget to include this line where printf is declared at the top of my file? And indeed, that's exactly what I forgot to do. And so if I go to the top of the file and put that line in there, now the program will work. And so when your program doesn't compile and you're not totally sure why, you're not sure what those error messages mean, Help 50 is there to assist you in the process of figuring out what it is that you might need to change about your code. So now that I have the code, and hopefully now it compiles, I now want to see whether or not it's correct, whether it does what the specification asks for this program to do, in this case, print out the words hello world. For this, we have a tool for you called check50. And the way you use check50 is in the command line, write the word check50, and then followed by the slug for the problem. And the slug is just a unique identifier that identifies a specific problem within CS50. And if you look at the instruction page for any of the problems, near the bottom of the instruction page for the problem, there will be a description of how to run check50 and what slug to run it with. For this case, I'll run check50 space cs50/2017/fall/hello. And if I press return there, initially I'll be prompted to log in with your GitHub username and password, so make sure you remember that. But after you enter it in once, check50 will remember your GitHub username and password so that you don't need to rewrite it every time. And what that'll do is take my code, upload it to CS50's servers, run some checks on it, and then output some smiley faces and frowny faces indicating which of the checks your code passes and which checks it doesn't. And so in this case, it looks like I passed hello.c existing, my file exists, and it compiles, that's good, but it looks like I failed this third check of actually printing out the words hello world. And if I'm looking for more detail as to what exactly happened, there's a link here at the bottom. If I open that link, I'll be taken to a page that describes each check. Green smiley face means I passed it, and red frowny face means I didn't. And it will allow me to compare, here's what was expected out of my program, and this is what my program actually did. And it looks like in this case, I just misspelled the word hello. And so if I were to fix that, run check50 again, hopefully then I would see all green smiley faces as a result. And so definitely feel free to take advantage of check50 as you're working through these problems to find out, does your program actually work according to what we're expecting out of the program? In addition to correctness, though, there are two other axes on which problems are graded, design and style. And we do have a tool that allows you to assess how well styled your code is. How pretty does it look? Are things well indented? So you notice right now in my code, everything looks pretty clean. In particular, these two curly braces are lined up in a single line. And so if I were to run style50, our tool for style checking on this code, and then run style50 on this particular file, hello.c, which is the name of my file, it says it looks good, but consider adding more comments. So it's well styled, but there are no comments, so maybe I want to add one. But if, on the other hand, my code were poorly styled, where these curly braces are not lined up and they're sort of all over the place, and I were to run style50 again, style50, hello.c, what I'll see is that style50 outputs my code with this red or green highlighting, where the red highlighting means get rid of this stuff, where there's extra space here that I don't need, and I should be getting rid of that spacing in order to style my code better. And so style50 is a tool for assessing the style of your code and telling you how to fix it, and check50 is a tool for assessing the correctness of your code and telling you what might need to change in order to make it correct. And so those tools plus help50 for understanding compiler error messages can be very helpful to you as you go about working through your code, figuring out why it doesn't compile or why it doesn't work, and we definitely recommend that you take advantage of those as well. And so that's just a brief introduction to some of the tools that are built into CS50 IDE that you can use starting with problem set 1.
We will stick around for questions, but thank you so much for coming. This is CS50.